Welcome to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, our monthly performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. For September, we'll learn about the Iowa Composer Forum's Fall Concert. We'll celebrate the 100th anniversary season of the Quad City Symphony Orchestra. We'll investigate UNI's amazing documentary film series, bringing an internationally acclaimed director to campus. We'll take a peek at Hancher's Performing Arts Series, and we'll get the inside scoop with the Des Moines Symphony's music director and conductor, Maestro Joseph Junta, about the orchestra's exciting upcoming 2014-15 programs. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. Maestro Junta starts off by outlining the Des Moines Symphony's new season.
We're opening with the Firebird, the 1919 version of Firebird, which is, of course, wonderful. I've coupled that with the Prokofiev First Symphony, the Classical Symphony, which is a delightful early piece of Sergei Prokofiev's. In the first half, we start with a very peppy march, the Procession of the Nobles of Rimsky-Korsakov, and I've invited a wonderful Armenian pianist whose name is Neyra Argamanyan, and Neyra will be doing the Khachaturian piano concerto, which has not been done here very often and is really a great piece of music. So I'm very excited about this first program.
You're bringing in a world-class violinist for your second Masterworks. Tell us about that show.
Yes, we are. Anna Kiko Myers has been a friend for years. She's been to Des Moines twice in the early 90s, and we talked about what repertoire for her to play, and we all decided that it was more than overdue that the Des Moines audiences hear the Vivaldi Four Seasons. So Anne has just recorded the Four Seasons with the English Chamber Orchestra, and she felt that this would still be in her repertoire, and she'd love to play it with us. So we're doing the Four Seasons of Vivaldi and doing these in an unusual way. What we're doing is splitting them. We're starting with the Verdi La Forza del Destino overture and then doing two concertos of the Vivaldi, intermission, and then we follow that with two more seasons of the Vivaldi, and then we end with the wonderful Pini di Roma, The Pines of Rome by Respighi. So again, it's a wonderful, wonderful, appealing program, very challenging for the orchestra, and I'm really looking forward to working with Anna Kiko Myers once again.
And tell us about your Masterworks 3, which is another collaboration with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
It is. This is our fifth collaboration with the CSO in the Beyond the Score format. This time it's called the Beethoven 5th Fate Knox? And these programs are wonderfully conceived. And we chose the Beethoven 5th because it's just one of those war horses that orchestras are attracted to since it was first played in the early 1800s, and we just feel that it's a piece that it's appealing from a perspective that the audiences are going to find out something that they did not know about the Beethoven 5th, and that's why I think this format is so exciting. First half, we simply have the orchestra on stage with a screen above our heads and some actors talk about the inspiration and things that were going on in the region at the time and wonderful little tidbits about the music. It's very interesting. It's just like watching a wonderful theatrical production. And the orchestra participates in musical examples as the actors cite them. And then after intermission, we just come back and play the piece as we normally would. So it's a wonderful format to learn, to be enriched by, and also very entertaining.
Now, in your Masterworks 4 concert, you're bringing in a guest conductor. Tell us about this.
I am. We've been very fortunate to bring in some really remarkable guest conductors here over the years. And George Mester has been a friend of mine for probably 30 years. He was the music director of the Aspen School when I was there as a student and has now been twice the music director in Louisville, also conducts an orchestra in Florida, longtime music director in Pasadena. So George has had a wonderful career conducting orchestras all over the world and in this country, and I'm very excited about bringing two pieces that he does better, as far as I'm concerned, than anybody in the world, the Mendelssohn Scottish Symphony and Debussy's La Mer. Neither one of these pieces have been done with the Des Moines Symphony for many years. He's also bringing in a friend of his who he has worked with before, Robert Edward Tees, and Robert is a pianist, and George thinks the world of him, and he's going to be doing a piece that's never been done in Des Moines, the first piano concerto of Sergei Prokofiev. So that should be a very exciting program and something that people, I hope, look forward to.
And for your fifth Masterworks, you have another guest pianist on the roster.
We do. His name is Jia Chang Sean, and his nickname is Sean Sean. And Jia is someone that I discovered in Aspen last summer. He played for Chris O'Reilly's From the Top, a program that I know is very close to public radio's hearts. And Chris was doing one of his live broadcasts from Aspen last summer, and I heard this young man play, and the next day I asked Chris if he was the real deal, and he said he absolutely was. So I'm very excited about having him here. He's a delightful young man that I know everyone will enjoy. He's going to play, by the way, the Chopin Second Concerto with us. And also on that program is a piece that we haven't played for a long time, the Mozart Hofner Symphony No. 35. It's always a delight to play and conduct and listen to Mozart. And we're ending that program with the Liszt Les Préludes, another great appealing and challenging piece, one of the great Liszt tone poems of all time, and a piece that also is new to the Des Moines Symphony and to our audiences, the Shostakovich Sixth Symphony. This doesn't have nearly the fanfare and the bravura that the Fifth has, but it's a piece that has a lot of appeal. It's a side of Shostakovich that we don't see often, and I know that people will really, really enjoy this piece.
And now you're going to have also a cellist who's been here before. He's coming back.
Yeah, Joshua Roman was a real audience favorite when he was here before. He played Lalo with us. This time he's coming back for one of the great cello concertos of all time, the Dvorak Cello Concerto, last played here by Yo-Yo Ma many years ago. And Josh has had a wonderful career since then. You know, as a young man, he became the principal cellist of the Seattle Symphony. He still lives there, travels all over the world, and he's a very exciting young artist, and I'm really eager to work with him again. This program opens with the John Adams Chairman Dances, which was last done for my first official concert in Des Moines, which is a great, great piece from Nixon in China. And then we're ending the program with the Sibelius Second Symphony. This is certainly Jean Sibelius's most popular symphony. It's a beautiful, beautiful work, and again, has not been done in Des Moines for 26 years, so we're very eager to play it for our audience.
Tell us about the season finale.
We're, you know, playing concerts on Memorial Day weekend, so we've come up with a program that we're just simply calling a Memorial Day Tribute and Season Finale Appalachian Springs. So it's all American music, and I think we've got some really exciting pieces to play for our audiences that weekend. We're going to begin with the Copland Fanfare for the Common Man, and then an actor from the Guthrie Theater will come down and narrate Lincoln Portrait with us. We're also playing Appalachian Spring of Aaron Copland, Aaron Copland being one of the great American composers of all time. On the second half of this program, we have a commission work that we're doing by Steve Heitzig, and it's going to be the second symphony and sculptor. There's a few other sculptors that Steve has not written music for, and through a very generous gift of John and Mary Papajohn, they're underwriting this second commission, which is going to be a major commission for us by Steve Heitzig. So we're calling it Symphony and Sculptor 2, and it will have some visuals as Symphony and Sculptor 1 did, and we do plan to make a DVD out of this that will be sent all over the world, art museums and various outlets to sell. And then we're going to follow that with what we're calling a John Williams American Saga. We're playing some music from The Patriot and some music from Lincoln and the Midway March and so on. We've pieced together a very nice 20-25 minute suite of John Williams music that will have still photography accompanying this music, which will be primarily dedicated to all of our war veterans, both those that are alive, those that have passed away. And the finale of the entire evening will be the Howard Hanson Song of Democracy. This is a piece that was written post-World War II, and this is a beautiful piece, very traditional, very humbling in its roots of the poetry by Walt Whitman. And I'm excited about working with Tim McMillan. This will be the first time that I work with Tim, who is the director of choral activities at the Simpson College. His Simpson College Choir and Chamber Singers will be joining us, along with his community group that he conducts, which is the Des Moines Vocal Arts Ensemble. So this will be a wonderful finale to what I think is going to be a great season. Also on our series, we're offering an additional Pops this year. We normally have our traditional New Year's Eve Pops, which this year will be Cirque de la Symphony. And then we've invited the brilliant Broadway star Audra McDonald to do a one-night concert with us in February. So it's a very, very exciting season with a lot of variety for people.
Tell us how folks can get more information and tickets.
The easiest way is on our website, which is dmsymphony.org. So that's the easiest way. And then, of course, they can always call Ticketmaster and get more information, or simply calling our office or emailing our marketing director, which is sophia@dmsymphony.org.
Maestro Joseph Junta, music director and conductor of the Des Moines Symphony, describing the orchestra's sensational 77th season ahead. The Des Moines Symphony performs their debut Firebird concerts on September 27th and 28th at the Civic Center of Greater Des Moines. Just ahead, we'll discover details about the Quad City Symphony's 100th season. We'll take a behind-the-scenes look at acclaimed documentary director Lucy Walker. We'll see what Hancher's 2014-15 lineup has to offer, and we'll investigate new works being presented next month on the Iowa Composer Forum's fall concert. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
I feel like music is another one of those resources that we have, and we don't always think of it as a resource. We may think of it as some sort of a luxury item, but in fact, it's something very important to our culture. And people that are interested in making music and listening to music and being involved in the creation of music should know who their local composers are.
Brooke Joyce, the Iowa Composer Forum's president and the associate professor of music and composer in residence at Luther College. The Iowa Composers Forum was started in Des Moines 27 years ago. The forum now boasts a membership of over 50 and is one of the few organizations that is dedicated to the composition and promotion of new music.
We tend to do a single event in the fall. In the past couple of years, that's been at the Opus Concert Cafe in Cedar Rapids. And then we do a spring festival of new music, which is typically over a weekend and may feature anywhere between 3 and 5 concerts, all new music, many of them premieres. Occasionally, we'll do commissions. In fact, every year we have a commission project with the Iowa Choral Directors Association, as well as the Iowa Music Teachers Association. So we're very active in both the performance and the creation of new music by living composers.
Let's talk about your fall concert, and you have some really cool pieces, so let's talk about that.
We have a terrific group of composers and works that will be featured on our concert. It's October 4th, and we have a work by two Jerrys, Jerry Casey, a longtime member of the forum, a work by another popular Jerry, that's Jerry Owen, a very prominent Iowan composer. We also have two wonderful female composers, Linda Robbins Coleman and Jillian Whitaker, have works on the concert. Two young composers, Zach Zubo and Jonathan Wilson. So all of those pieces are, you know, in the, I would say, 3 to 7 minute range. And then we have a series of short interludes, piano interludes, by 5 other composers that will be performed by David Veo, James Romig, Greg Steinke, Zing Zimin Pan, and Elaine Erickson. So we're looking forward to a wonderful concert of really exciting and engaging music.
Tell us a little bit about some of these works. The two Jerrys, each one of them is presenting a trio.
We have a wonderful group of musicians playing on this concert, including violinist Tarn Travers, and then the Murasaki Duo, which is comprised of Eric Kutz, cello, and Miko Kominami, piano. And the three of them are going to play two trios by Jerry Casey and Jerry Owen. And Jerry Owen's piece was written specifically for this concert and for this particular group of musicians. So we're really excited about those two pieces in particular.
And the Ragonata by Linda Robbins Coleman.
This is a piece that she has written previously. I don't actually know the performance history here, but it's three rags written in the ragtime style, but with obviously a contemporary kind of take and flavor to them. And so that'll be a really fun piece to hear on this concert.
Jillian's piece involves solo cello, but it also has some electronic elements to it as well.
This is something which many, many composers in the mid to late 20th century and today especially are interested in, and that is including electronics with live performers. And so we have two pieces on this program that do that, one by Jillian Whittaker called The Roadrunner, and that's for cello and electronics, and then Zach Zubow's piece, Fugitive Yellow Shirt, which is for violin and electronics. And I happen to have heard recordings of both of these. They've been performed before, and they're just really exciting, and they're fun to listen to, and they're really fun to watch as you see the performer sort of listening to and engaging with this electronic component.
Tell us about Jillian. She has this goal of heading off to LA. How is her dream progressing?
She had several wonderful offers to pursue graduate studies, but she decided to move to Los Angeles and begin to pursue a career in the film music business. And I think she has a wonderful career ahead of her. And I'm so excited that she's able to come back for this concert. It'll be great to reconnect with her.
Zach is a Luther grad, so tell us a little bit about this Fugitive Yellow Shirt.
Zach Zubow was one of my first composition students when I arrived at Luther College in 2005, and so I helped him put together his graduate portfolio that year, and he went on to earn degrees at Illinois State for his master's, and then he finished his doctoral degree with David Gomper at the University of Iowa a few years ago. And in the meantime, he's been teaching at Coe College in Cedar Rapids. And Zach is very interested in electronics. And Fugitive Yellow Shirt is a wonderful way of combining a kind of virtuosic violin writing with a really exciting and dynamic part for electronics. I think it's going to be a really wonderful piece. And Tarn, our violinist, is, I think, the perfect player for this kind of piece. High energy, virtuosic player. We also have two graduate students from the University of Iowa who will be performing some songs by Jonathan Wilson, another young composer in our midst. And Jonathan Wilson is a relatively new member to the Forum, but he's made a name for himself. He's won a couple of awards. He was recently awarded a commission from the Iowa Music Teachers Association. He's a graduate student at the University of Iowa, and he is currently working on a song cycle based on the poetry of Sarah Teasdale. And so we're going to perform a selection of these songs, and these will be performed by two of his colleagues from the university, fellow graduate students.
Tell us briefly then about the other five folks who are going to be presenting these short piano interludes.
We issue a call for scores so people can submit their works for consideration, and then the musicians choose the works that they feel will make a good program and that they can put together in the amount of time that they have. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to try and include works by everyone who submitted pieces for the concert. And so, unfortunately, we couldn't program all of the music that we wanted to. And so I suggested, hey, how about we find some short pieces by these other composers whose music is really wonderful but just didn't fit on the program for whatever reason? And that's why we have these little piano interludes, which will happen between the other works on the program.
Tell us a little bit about David Veo.
David Veo is another longtime member of the Iowa Composers Forum. He teaches at Illinois Wesleyan University. And he is just a wonderful composer. We've programmed a number of his works over the years, and he's actually going to create a new piano work for this concert.
Tell us then about Greg Steinke.
Greg Steinke is another longtime member of the Forum, and he's a really wonderful and interesting composer. He's lived for many years on the West Coast, and so we don't get a chance to see him quite as often as we'd like. And a lot of his music is influenced by themes and words and ideas from Native American cultures. So I always find his music to be really interesting and different. And so he actually suggested some piano pieces for this concert that he wrote many years ago. And so I think it'll be really fun to re-engage with his music in this concert.
And Romig?
Jake is an important member of the forum. He's been a great supporter of ours, and we try to program his music as much as we can. I mean, he submitted a very short 1 minute piano piece for this concert. And this was another thing that got me thinking about how about performing a number of such pieces as interludes. And you can imagine if you're trying to put a program together, a 1 minute piece by itself is a little tough to program. Is it something you put at the very beginning? Do you put it at the end? You know, what is it? And I thought, well, why not just go a little bit farther and have several 1 minute pieces so it's kind of a little theme? And this is a piece which Jake wrote specifically to accompany a painting. And so it's responding to this visual element, which I think is a really nifty idea. And Zing Zimin Pan studied at the University of Northern Iowa and then moved to the West Coast to do his further graduate work. His music has always been very appealing to me for a number of reasons. And he's another composer who submitted some really wonderful music for the concert, but we just couldn't fit it in for a number of reasons. And so I invited him to write a new short piano piece, which he's also doing. And I think he is going to take the lead of Jake Romig and write a piece in response to a painting as well. So I think that'll be fun.
And Elaine Erickson.
Elaine Erickson is an important Iowan composer. She lives in the Des Moines area, is very prolific, has been a composer for a number of years. And I think she came to the forum only in the past few years, but the more that I've gotten to know her music, the more I really enjoy it. And I've performed a number of pieces by Elaine. And she really is a performer's composer in that she writes music that really feels good to play and is very rewarding. So she is also going to be represented on this program with a short piano interlude that I will play.
Brooke Joyce, the Iowa Composer Forum's president and the associate professor of music and composer in residence at Luther College. The Forum's fall concert will be held next month on October 4th in Cedar Rapids, starting at 7:30 p.m. Just ahead, we'll investigate UNI's William and Stephanie Cloese documentary film series. We'll explore what Hancher is planning for their upcoming artist series, and we'll catch a sneak peek into the Quad City Symphony's 100th anniversary season. This is the Iowa Arts Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
It is an extra special year. This is our 100th season. So we've designed programs that celebrate our history. We're also using this opportunity to bring in soloists that we maybe normally wouldn't bring, to reprise repertoire that is audience favorites. We're also using the 100th anniversary to celebrate our future. And so we are commissioning composers to write short opening pieces on 5 of the 6 programs. We're repeating a piece. We kind of jumped the gun, and we had Michael Torkey write us a piece to open last season with the understanding that it would also be performed on this season. I love the fact that we've got Michael Torkey, who's this great, great composer with a huge career. I like the fact that we're performing his piece twice. And as it turns out, it's the perfect piece to pair with Bruckner Fourth Symphony.
The Quad City Symphony's executive director, Benjamin Loeb. The orchestra, under their music director and conductor, Maestro Mark Russell Smith, will commemorate this landmark year with a special 100th season celebration program, along with Riverfront and Holiday Pops concerts, a signature chamber series, youth ensemble concerts, and their masterworks season, which kicks off on the weekend of October 4th.
We're opening the program with a world premiere by John Franzen. He's an Iowa composer. He's from Maquoketa. And we're really excited to bring him back. His sister is a great local artist also, Rose Franzen. John lives in Los Angeles and writes a lot for movies, but we're excited to have him write a short piece for us. We've also got Garrick Olson coming back to the Quad City Symphony. Garrick has actually a long history with the Quad Cities. He performed here early in his career, 3 times, but he hasn't been back since 1989. He is one of the greatest American master pianists, and we're so proud to have him back in Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto, probably the most difficult piece in the Piano Concerto repertoire. Then we're finishing the program with the most popular, most performed piece in the Quad City Symphony repertoire, Dvorak New World Symphony, which everyone will enjoy.
Tell us about your Masterworks 2 concert.
We're really excited about Masterworks 2, as we are for all of them. This is more of a lyrical program. We're starting with a piece by Jake Romick, or James Romick, as our program says. Jake is a local composer and teaches in the area. He's writing a new piece. We haven't seen the music yet, but I know some of his music, and it's really wonderful. Then we're following with Brahms' Violin Concerto. Brahms is so beautiful and lyric, and Aaron Keefe, the concertmaster of the Minnesota Orchestra, is coming down to perform with us. And we're finishing with Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, the Pathetique. And I think the program's also interesting because Brahms and Tchaikovsky had a mutual disregard for each other's music, and here we are putting them both on the program, and I know the audience is going to love hearing them juxtaposed and individually.
And what's happening here for the Masterworks 3 concert?
Masterworks 3 is going to be a really fun showcase of the Quad City Symphony musicians. We've taken our soloists from within the orchestra. We're going to be featuring six musicians in the orchestra. The program's going to start, though, with a piece by David Gomper. He's a wonderful composer at the University of Iowa, and his music is so colorful and kaleidoscopic. It's going to be a great way to kind of expand the imagination of our audience. Then we go into a short piece for French horn and orchestra featuring our principal French horn player, Mark Zyla. Then we're going to feature four of our principal musicians, our concertmaster, Naha Greenholz, principal cellist, Hannah Holman, principal oboist, Andy Parker, and principal bassoonist, Ben Coelho, in Franz Joseph Haydn's Sinfonia Concertante, which is a concerto for four instruments, but it's almost an orchestral piece. In some catalogs, it's described as Symphony No. 105. In the second half, we're starting with Ravel Introduction and Allegro for harp and strings, but it also has a solo flute and a solo clarinet part, so we get to feature them as well. And we finish the program with Mozart Symphony No. 40, the great G minor symphony. So it's really just going to be a great, exciting program where we hear the incredible talent within our orchestra.
Let's hear about the musical cathedrals.
We chose that title because of the pieces. Michael Torkey's piece is called Oracle, and it sounds as if it's built from building blocks. It grows and grows and grows, and then it recedes, and then it grows again. Then we have Mozart Flute Concerto with Damari McGill as soloist. He's wonderful, remarkable, energetic. It's going to be a beautiful performance, but I see the Mozart almost as a depiction of the filigree of these Gothic cathedrals you would see in Salzburg, where Mozart was living when he composed this piece. The second half of the program is devoted to Bruckner's Symphony No. 4. Now, Bruckner's early career was as an organist in a cathedral in Linz, and I've always imagined that his music was a depiction of these huge edifices. These are long pieces. They have massive sound structures of the brass and the strings, and it accumulates to this very powerful effect. So I kind of see this as musical cathedrals that we're presenting.
Continuing on, you also have this American Tapestry concert. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, we are an American orchestra. We're right here in the middle of the country, right in the Midwest, and we have performed American music for the last 100 years. I believe, as does our music director, Mark Russell Smith, that it's almost an obligation for American orchestras to show to our audience what a wealth of beautiful and great music has been produced by American composers. This program is showing this tapestry. It really is a tapestry because there's so much variety. It starts with a world premiere by a local, a Davenport composer, William Campbell, who teaches at St. Ambrose. He has written pieces for us before. Coyote Dances was really successful. Then we're moving into Roy Harris' Third Symphony. Roy Harris taught on the East Coast, but he was from Nebraska. And I think you can hear this bold feeling that the Midwesterners had in America in the middle of the 20th century. The first half concludes with one of the most popular pieces of American music, George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. It's being performed by our guest soloist, Joel Fan, who made an appearance last season. This is going to be much more of a spotlight. Joel comes back after the half to perform Morton Gould's Interplay, which was originally called American Concertette No. 2002, I think. And then it was choreographed by Balanchine and renamed. So its more common presentation is in a ballet, but it's a lively short four-movement concerto that lasts about 15 minutes, and it makes a perfect pair to Gershwin, Rhapsody in Blue. We're finishing the program with perhaps the greatest depiction of Americana, or some of the greatest, is the suite from Rodeo or Rodeo by Aaron Copland. Copland wrote so much music that's identified as American music. So I think as the listener hears the whole program, you do get a grasp of this range of music that America has produced.
Tell us about the Masterwork 6, and you have some incredible singers and some wonderful music on this performance.
We certainly do. Our season itself is ending with Beethoven 9th Symphony. Now, everybody knows Beethoven 9th. Certainly, everybody knows the big tune in the last movement. And it really is one of the greatest accomplishments of humankind, I believe. It's an unbelievable effect, an emotional effect that we explore and we move around and we experience all these different aspects of human nature only to come together in the last movement with this joyous sense of brotherhood and mankind. It really is a great way to bring a community together. We have four great soloists coming in. The challenge when you present Beethoven 9 is what else do you put on the program? Because it is so huge, it's so powerful. We're starting with a world premiere, a piece by James Stevenson. Jim is a composer who's based in Chicago, and very last minute, he was asked to substitute for Lee Hyla, who we had originally commissioned, but unfortunately passed away. So Jim stepped in and agreed to write a piece, and we're trying to decide at this moment whether it's going to be a solo orchestra piece or a choral piece. The chorus is going to be featured on a performance of Schoenberg's Frieda auf Erden, Peace on Earth. It's going to be an a cappella version. There is a version for chorus and string orchestra, but I think we're going to do it just with the chorus. And again, the message ties in so beautifully with Beethoven's Ode to Joy. I know it's going to be this enlightening experience where everybody's going to walk out really understanding why orchestra music is so critical for all of our communities to have.
Tell us about the magnificent Masterwork 7 concert.
Well, I wish it were a Masterwork 7 concert, which would mean we get to do it twice, but we have a big gala concert with Yo-Yo Ma, the greatest cellist alive and one of the greatest musicians, and just a great person. And he's coming, he's making a special appearance with us after the season is over to perform Dvorak Cello Concerto. Also on the program, we've got Brahms' Academic Festival Overture and Tchaikovsky Romeo and Juliet. So we're pairing that little odd couple there. Dvorak, I think, follows in the lineage of both of those composers, very lyrical. But it's really special for us to get Yo-Yo Ma. He is in such demand. And when I spoke to him, he recognized that this 100th season was very, very important. And he wanted to do whatever he could to help us celebrate and bring the community together. We're fairly confident that it's going to sell out. Right now, tickets to Yo-Yo are only available to subscribers, and we're going to see where that goes. Once we finish up all of our subscription work, if we have some single tickets left, we will probably make those available to the public, but I'm not guessing there will be very many.
And you're going to kick off the season with an outdoor concert.
That's right. It's one of the Quad City Symphony traditions to do our Riverfront Pops on the Saturday after Labor Day. This year, we've got Michael Cavanaugh coming in to perform the music of Elton John and more. And we do it right out at LeClaire Park, right on the river. We get the Quad City Symphony in the band shell. We have 1812 Overture at the end with fireworks. It's a great day. And of course, this year, the weather is going to be perfect because that's what we ordered. And we have thousands of people out, usually, you know, 6,500, 7,500 people just out on the lawn having a picnic, enjoying this great music.
So, Ben, how can folks get more information and that sort of thing?
Our website is probably the first place to go, qcso.org. And there are many, many links where you can download the brochure and read all about the programs. You can order subscriptions and tickets online through our website. You can also call our box office, which is 563-322-7276. And you can always email us at boxoffice@qcsymphony.com. But there's so many ways to get tickets. You can find tickets on Ticketmaster, too, if you like.
The Quad City Symphony's Executive Director, Benjamin Loeb. The orchestra performs on Saturday nights at Davenport's Adler Theater and on Sunday afternoons at Centennial Hall on the Augustana College campus in Rock Island. Tonight, the QCSO kicks off their season with an outdoor Riverfront Pops concert starting at 6:30 in LeClaire Park in Davenport. Also under the stars this evening at 7:30, the WCF Symphony will present their opening concert of the season at the River Loop Amphitheater in downtown Waterloo. Tomorrow night at 7, Orchestra Iowa will perform their Bruce Moore Orchestra American Salute Concert on the front lawn of Bruce Moore Mansion in Cedar Rapids. Iowa Public Radio will be presenting a live broadcast of that concert. And continuing through September 21st, the East-West River Fest will be celebrating the arts in the Quad Cities. Information at eastwestriverfest.com. Just ahead, details about Hancher's Artist Series and UNI's William and Stephanie Cloese upcoming documentary film series. This is the iWard Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
Describe it sometimes like falling in love. You sort of never know when it's going to happen. And I spend all my life sort of looking for wonderful subjects for films, and everything I'm doing in the world, I'm always thinking, could that be a movie? Could that be a movie? And then once in a while, the light bulb lights up and I think, oh my gosh, this could definitely be a movie and I want to make it. So different subjects. And I think that the common thread is always this question, will it make a great movie? I don't want to make boring documentaries. If I'm going to take up an hour and a half for those long movies, or maybe 20 or 30 minutes for the shorter ones, if I want to take up a big chunk of somebody's life, I want them to be really enjoying it, to do something really, really fantastic and fascinating that will really stay with people and resonate with them in future.
British documentary filmmaker and two-time Academy Award nominee and UNI's distinguished guest filmmaker, Lucy Walker. Lucy will visit the University of Northern Iowa later this month to screen four of her works for UNI's William and Stephanie Cloese documentary film series. Lucy shares how she became hooked on directing documentaries.
I started out doing theater because when I was growing up, I didn't really have video cameras around, and I never thought you could do this for a job, and I wasn't one of these kids that had a nice 8mm camera that I was filming. My grandmother had one of those, and I was very enchanted when she made home movies and showed them to us. Then later I was making theater, mostly because I really liked being around theater, but I realized I wasn't very good as an actor. I'd much rather help other people show up, organize everything, and act, rather than actually be on stage myself. And then I was really lucky. I got a scholarship to go to NYU Graduate Film School. I was very young. I was the youngest in my class, grad school. I didn't really know anybody in New York City, or I wasn't at all sure if it was the right thing to do, but I just knew it was really fun and really interesting. And then when I was at NYU, most of the classes I took were about fiction filmmaking. And there just happened to be one teacher there, Barbara Koppel, who taught one class about documentary filmmaking. And I got one internship with a documentary filmmaker, and it was transformative. And I think it's also been a really exciting time in documentary film because the technology changed just right around then. And for the first time, we were having these very high quality, portable, affordable cameras. So you could shoot a whole bunch, you could carry your camera around, and then you could still blow it up to be on a movie theater screen. And it was really lovely, high quality images. And then also the editing technology changed so that you could shoot a whole bunch and figure it out afterwards with some real precision.
Now, while you were at NYU, you also were a musician and a DJ. Tell us a bit about that.
I think the way of working with music was really interesting, and becoming really comfortable with music and chopping it up and mixing it together, as you do when you're a DJ, was actually really good training for films now, because with my soundtracks now, I really like to take music from different places and mix it together rather than using a traditional composer, which is something that most filmmakers, I don't think, know is possible. But if you have a DJ background, it's just second nature that you sort of take the bits of music you want and you mix them up exactly how you want. And that's how I've done almost all of my film soundtracks, actually.
Tell us, Lucy, what is so important about documentaries and why do they matter?
Oh, I love documentaries. And it's such a good question about why are they having such a golden age right now. I think there's so many wonderful documentaries being created these days. And I think that technology answer, I really think that the technology has changed everything. We can now take cameras into unexpected places, into homes, up Mount Everest, you know, traipsing around the place. And I think we can actually get a true picture of what life is like. And I think we are really hungry for truth and real reflections, but we're also hungry for stories. And I think we're really inspired by stories that are in the real world. And then if we can, you know, shoot and edit them beautifully into something that's quite watchable and quite nicely crafted, you know, something that people are very interested in at the moment. I think people really want to understand the world and they don't just want, you know, somebody else's representation of it. I think they're really excited to meet people for themselves. And I think of my job sometimes as being like the most fantastic introducer. I can introduce people in Iowa or California, where I live, to people around the world that are so different from them. They may be blind students living in Tibet, or they might be picking through garbage for a living in the world's largest garbage dump in Brazil, or they might be growing up Amish and turning 16 and being allowed outside the community for the very first time and being allowed to get a haircut and drive in a car and wear jeans and listen to music and all the things that they haven't been allowed yet. And these people that seem very, very far away from us, when you get to know them, it's so fantastic to really feel like you can walk in the shoes of somebody who's really quite far away from you in real life, and be pretty difficult to go and meet somebody like that for yourself. But thanks to these documentary films, we can really think, what is life like for that person? What is this difficult situation like for that person? What is it like to be a snowboarder who's headed for the Olympics when you land on your head and have a life-changing traumatic brain injury and then have to figure out what to do next? So I've been really lucky to meet some incredible people around the world making my films. And it's my great honor that thanks to the magic of films, people can get to see them on the big movie screen or on the intimate TV screen or even on their iPhones or whoever people are watching these days. They can get to know these people and really sort of experience what life is like from different people's perspectives. And I think people seem really interested in watching that right now, which is lucky because I absolutely love to make it.
At UNI's documentary film series, they'll be showing four of your works, two documentaries, The Crash Reel and The Wasteland, as well as the two short films, The Tsunami and The Cherry Blossom and The Lion's Mouth Opens. Your work spans so many different topics. Tell us how you stumbled into these different opportunities.
That's a good question. How do I pick my movies? I don't know. I'm really looking for things that are going to make documentaries great. And not sometimes it's not just a good story, because sometimes a good story would make a good magazine piece, something that'll make a good movie. And so, for example, my film The Crash Reel, it's about an Olympic hopeful snowboarder, Kevin Pierce, from an amazing family, who's headed to the Vancouver Olympics when he lands on his head. But that's just where the story starts. Actually, with his incredible family, the story starts to get really interesting from that point on. And with my film Wasteland, I really like this artist Vic Muniz, but I didn't think that if you're just an artist, it's a very interesting documentary, because so many of my favorite artists are wonderful, but would I actually, you know, want to watch a documentary about them? I might want to watch it. I might want to go to a show of their art. So, in fact, with Vic, we collaborated and we came up with a project in the largest garbage dump in the world in Brazil, which is where he was born and grew up very poor. And he's now a very rich artist in New York City. But he was kind of going back to his roots and collaborating with the people in the garbage dump who sift through garbage for a living. And I was very fascinated and quite scared, I must confess, to meet these people and to think, well, would they want to do an art project? And what's going to happen? And are we going to be okay? You know, I absolutely didn't know what was going to happen, but I thought it would be interesting to find out what would happen. And I've climbed Mount Everest with blind kids and with my film, The Lion's Mouth Opens. It's about an amazing young woman who goes to get tested for a very difficult disease, Huntington's disease. And she's very wonderful to watch. And my film, Tsunami in the Cherry Blossom, is about the Japanese tsunami survivors and this beautiful cherry blossom season that happens in that region and how they come back to life after such an incredibly sad disaster as the tsunami they had there 3 years ago. So all sorts of different topics all around the world. And some of them may not sound like they're your cup of tea, but I promise these people that I managed to find and tell their stories are just, you'll never forget them. They're just so wonderful, these people. And the story and what happens next is really interesting. And the films, I think, are very beautiful. They're very wonderfully filmed by these cameramen I've been lucky to collaborate with. So they really work as movies, even though the people in them are all real. So I think that that's the connecting thread. It's hopefully that they're really good stories with really wonderful people in really interesting worlds that will give people a lot of food for thought in their own lives. That's sort of what I'm aiming for there.
Internationally acclaimed British film director Lucy Walker. Lucy will be on the University of Northern Iowa campus for UNI's William and Stephanie Cloese documentary film series. The series, which brings the world's most distinguished documentary filmmakers to UNI, is directed by UNI's filmmaker-in-residence and adjunct instructor for the Department of Communication Studies, David O. Shields. Film screenings of Walker's works will be held on September 22nd and 23rd, starting at 7 p.m. at UNI's Lang Hall Auditorium. Screenings are free and open to the public. For more details, please see uni.edu/comstudies and click on the Lucy Walker icon. On October 3rd through the 5th, the Iowa Independent Film Festival will be held in Mason City, and the Wild Rose Independent Film Festival will be held in Des Moines on November 6th through the 13th. Just ahead, Hancher's new season. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
Building is over 30% of the way done. Our opening will be the fall of 2016. It's not that far away when you think about it. It will be 8 years that we've had without a building. So I would just encourage everybody to stay tuned. When they drive through Iowa City or drive by the site, you can really see the form of the building starting to take shape. They're constructing the largest crane that they will have on the job. I think it's about 130 to 135 feet tall. And this will be the crane that really helps them put some of the pieces up at the highest point, you know, in the theater. So we, as a staff, I think our donors, our ticket buyers, the University of Iowa, everybody is so excited. We can't wait.
Hancher's executive director, Chuck Swanson. Chuck fills us in on Hancher's 2014-15 season, called Great Artists and Great Audiences.
We're kicking off the season with a free outdoor performance with Al Jarreau. And this is in collaboration with Summer of the Arts. It's part of the Soul Festival. And Al Jarreau, he's an alum of the University of Iowa. He's a famous jazz vocalist. And when we first announced this, we announced this even before we announced our season. Everybody was so excited. Al Jarreau's been here before. He really has a following. And if the weather's great, September 19th, we're going to have a big crowd. And it's going to be on the Pentacrest, and everybody is excited about it. So on the other end, you know, these two bookends of the season, we're going to have another free performance. And this is, again, a collaboration with Summer of the Arts. And this is a group from Chile. It's a group called Inti Illimani. And they are really folk music from Chile. And what I love about this group, we had them about 10 years ago, is they really connect so well with people of all ages. And so we're going to take them around the state. We're going to take them up to Northwest Iowa, and we're going to end up, of course, in Iowa City, but this will be on the Ped Mall, and this will be the beginning of the summer Friday night concert series. Ira Glass, is that a name familiar to you? Ira Glass is, for those of you who don't know, he's the producer of This American Life on public radio, and he's bringing a performance. It's called Three Acts, Two Dancers, One Radio Host. And a couple of our staff members have seen this show, and they said it's a very special evening, a very poignant evening. It's exactly in three acts, and it's really telling stories. Some of the stories are real happy, real funny, and there's also a little bit of sadness. It's about life. It's about love. Ira Glass is a perfect host. And this premiered in Carnegie Hall, and he's got a tour set up. And, of course, the performance is at the Englert, but the Hancher season is one of the stops. So I'm very excited about that. Roberta Flack, I think that name will resonate with a lot of people. She's an American singer and songwriter. She's noted for jazz and folk and blues, and the two titles that, of course, come to mind, two Grammy Awards, First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, and Killing Me Softly with This Song. So that will be down at Riverside Casino, and we are excited to bring her. Also, Danu. Danu, we've had Danu before. This is an Irish group. This will actually be a Christmas program. And this will be perfect for families. Just, you know, a great way to celebrate the holiday. Very heartfelt music. That will also be at the Englert. Then we've got a big project coming up in November. This is a project with Liz Lerman. She's a choreographer. We've been working with her on this project for really almost 2 years now. There's been a real buildup. But it's called Healing Wars. And this is going to end up really being a project that is campus-wide. And it's really an exploration of war and healing. And we're including in this the College of Nursing, the College of Social Work, religious studies. There will be rhetoric students very involved in this, along with the dance department, the theater department, the music department, the Division of Performing Arts. Liz will come two times, once in September, once in October, and then the performances will be in November. And this is really a study of the Civil War, but really bringing the issues of the Civil War to our current wars of today. And Liz is really interested in medicine and wars, you know, how the discoveries in medicine really increased during wartime. She really focuses on women in the Civil War. This premiered this summer at the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C., and we are very excited to bring Liz Lerman to the university. This is going to be over Veterans Day, over that week. So we're really including a lot of veterans from the campus and veterans from the state, and really including students from all across the university. So we are gearing up for that one. That one's going to be a big one. And then the Joffrey Ballet, very good friends of Hancher's. We started a relationship way back in the 80s. So there will be two performances in Space Place, which is a great venue for dancers. This will include a broad range of choreography. There will be pieces by James Kadelka, Stanton Welch, and Christopher Wheeldon. And the beauty of this evening will be that Ashley Weeder, he is the artistic director, he's actually going to narrate. He's going to talk. And this is something that they rarely do, so we're excited. The Nile Project. This is a very unusual collaboration. We're excited about this. You know, the Nile, one of the greatest rivers of the world. What this project is about is there are, I think, 10 or 11 musicians from the countries that border the Nile, and they have been touring with this. And what this is all about is really showing how music can bring people together. These countries are really using music as a way to bridge economic problems, you know, social problems, issues that the countries around the Nile have been dealing with. So they're going to be here in March, and there again, we are going to connect them with students across the campus of the University of Iowa. There will be students in sustainability, in engineering. He will work with the Iowa Flood Center. We'll work with students in geography. We just really want to foster conversations through music, showing that the arts can be a way to help with difficult situations. Working Group Theater. They are a local theater company. They have become very good friends of Hancher's. We are going to be commissioning our fifth piece with Working Group Theater. It's a piece called All Recipes Are Home. And what this is about is there's a food theme here, for sure. We talked with Working Group Theater, at least a couple years ago, and we came up with the thought together that we really wanted to play about food. You think about Iowa, and one of the first things you think about is food. And of course, who doesn't love food? So this play is really a collaboration not only with Iowa City, but also Decorah and Grinnell. Sean Lewis, the artistic director, really does his research through a lot of interviewing, a lot of discussions with people on the topic of choice. And in this particular case, I know he has spent a lot of time up in Decorah. He even worked in some cafeteria lines up there. There's the organization Seed Savers up there. They serve a lot of natural food in the cafeterias. And so this play really has fostered the University of Iowa to create what we're calling a theme semester. And so the second semester of next year is going to be a theme throughout the university called Food for Thought. So it's all about teaching and learning. We're really including the academic areas, classes. We're including the museums, you know, Hancher, anybody that we can get, you know, to really connect what they're doing in classrooms or any other activities across campus. You'll be hearing more about this theme, Food for Thought. But Sean's play is about a brother and sister. The brother decides he wants to work on a farm, and so he comes to Iowa in search of a farm. He finds a farm, ends up the farm is on foreclosure. When he left home, his sister wanted him to bring a recipe to make a connection to home. Well, he forgets the recipe. So she ends up, you know, coming to Iowa in search of him. It's an exploration there again of all themes related to food. Susan Werner, speaking of food, she's an American singer and songwriter. She's another graduate of the University of Iowa, and she's bringing a program. It's a program called Hayseed. And there again, it's all about food, that food connection. She's from Manchester. She's a folk, jazz, and gospel singer. She plays the piano and the guitar. And it's interesting because since the brochure has come out, I have connected with so many people who have connections with Susan Werner. So she's one of our own. You know, she's an Iowan, and I think that's going to be real exciting. Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Their mission is to, of course, promote chamber music. It's going to be a Brahms program. They're one of the world's most important music ensembles. And they tour the world, and they always bring together young musicians of the highest quality. So we are excited to have them as a part of the classical music. Pacifica String Quartet. This is a collaboration with the University of Iowa String Quartet Residency. Their program will actually feature a commission. This is a commission that Hancher is partly responsible for. It's a consortium called Music Accord that really tries to promote young, aspiring composers. We are excited to be bringing the Pacifica String Quartet again. So there's just a huge variety of events at this particular time. The way to get tickets is to either call the box office, come to the box office, or just mail your order form in. And then at the end of August is when we can start selling tickets through the web. And people can choose their seats. They can go to the box office and choose their seats.
Hancher's Executive Director, Chuck Swanson. To get more information and to purchase tickets for Hancher's amazing 2014-15 season, please call 1-800-HANCHER or check out hancher.uiowa.edu. Today's Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks goes to Joseph Junta, Brooke Joyce, Ben Loeb, Lucy Walker, David O'Shields, and Chuck Swanson. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner. Thanks for this show also goes to IPR's music director, Al Scherz, along with Jason Burns and Garrett Van Leeuwen. Program research was provided by Nick Carlo. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.